Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left, as always, is my Lancashirean co-host, Joe Nutsy Nuttall. So, Joe, mate, how's your day been so far?
Not too bad, thank you. Just been, well, not really doing anything to do. Yeah, I was watching the football last night, PSG, Barca, which was good. That's about it. Not really done anything.
Really? No FIFA?
Yeah.
No. What about the IPL?
A bit of FIFA.
Get your eye on that.
The IPL, auction. I can't stay focused for auctions, so I'm like Chris Gayle in auctions.
Fair enough, Joe. But honestly, that should be interesting tomorrow. I'm thoroughly looking forward to that. I'm covering it on the Instagram page. But no, I'm glad to hear that you're doing well, mate. Of course, that's absolutely fantastic. And also joining us for this special episode of the County Cricket Podcast today, our Leicestershire County Cricket Club CEO Sean Jarvis and Fox's analyst Dan Weston. So, gents, first things first, thank you very much for joining us here on the podcast today. How have you two been today?
I'll go first. Yeah, it's a pleasure and an honour to be invited on. I think you had Scott Steele on. I listened to that one, which was great. So yeah, well done on that. For me today, I've had a strange day. I've been chatting to our MP John Ashworth. I think he's the Shadow Health Minister, so that's been interesting. Doing a bit of number crunching, which on the sort of finances of the club. So yeah, it's been all right. We're kind of working on all sorts of things behind the scenes that I think you guys call as the quiet revolution.
We do indeed.
So yeah, another busy day here at Upton Steel County Ground. I've got to get that plug in as well.
What about you, Dan?
Yeah, so yeah, I've been a busy one today. Just been doing a bit of a big Twitter mega thread on the IPL auction and discussing what options I think teams are going to go for, what players are going to go for, stuff like that. So, yeah, I love this time of the year. I'll be watching the auction tomorrow, and yeah, can't wait for it. So, to be honest with you, I prefer the auction to the actual matches. So.
Spoken like a true analyst. It's because of all the combinations, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'd agree with you there, Dan. Maybe not in terms of the games. I'm a fervent RCB fan. Hopefully this will be our year. I've already suffered 13 years of hurt at the hands of the challengers.
Yeah.
But yeah, should be an interesting season for all eight franchises, really. But yeah, that's enough about the IPL. Let's talk about today's podcast then, because we've got Dan and Sean on today to talk about, as Sean rightfully said, the quiet revolution undergoing at Grace Road, or Upton Steel Grace Road, as I should say at the moment. And basically, we're just going to be talking about a bit of review of the 2020 season, as well as a bit behind the recruitment process of the 2021 season as well. So, Sean, I'll start with you then to kickstart today's podcast. What were your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching the game?
Oh, blimey. You go back a long way. And it's a bit of an emotional story, really. My very first memory, I was born and bred in Leicester, but I moved to Yorkshire when I was 35, and I've kind of come back home now, but I'm sure we'll get into that. But my very first memory was my father bringing me here at Grace Road and watching the team of people like Davison and Tolchard that played at the ground. So my dad was a big umpire in Leicestershire. He did a lot of local cricket and second 11 cricket, and indeed his ashes are actually scattered out at Grace Road, so it bloody haunts me every single day. But yeah, so my early memories are of those great players back in the day, and it was the very first sports ground that I came to was Grace Road. So it's strange how my career has panned out. I've kind of started at Grace Road, and in my football career, I've literally done virtually every ground around the country, and I've now come back to my home. So it's quite emotional, but absolutely delighted to be here. And we've got a lot of work to do, but yeah, my first memory was of those great players back in the day.
Wow, that's an incredible story then. So your cricketing journey has really come full cycle then, Sean. In many, many
it
ways.
It is. I was never a great cricketer myself. I played a little bit local, but I was never that good. But yeah, it's weird. Throughout my whole of my life, I've always when I've been living and working in Yorkshire, I've always kept an eye on Leicestershire's fortunes, and you know, watched the players and whenever I could, I would come to the games, or when Leicestershire played Yorkshire, when I was up there, I obviously went to those matches. So yeah, it's really quite strange, really, how it's kind of gone full circle. And I've said, you know, I'm committed to the cause here, and I have a clear vision in my head of what I want us to achieve. And you know, one of the things I'm sure we'll talk about is that picture behind me. That's up there for a reason, but I want it to come down. So I'm very determined. I'm very determined over the short, medium, and long term to bring back better fortunes for Leicestershire, really. And people like Dan are going to help us do that. No pressure there, Dan, but you know, that's our target, really.
Well, yes, Sean, we will talk about that story behind the photo. I did read an article on that, actually, which is quite a funny tale between you and Nico. We will touch upon that. And, of course, the ambitions as the podcast progresses. But, Dan, what about yourself? How did you get into the world of cricket in the first place? Do you have any early cricketing memories, per se?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, I've always been a massive sports fan, just full stop. Loved all sports. Wasn't very good at it. Tried to play, you know, village cricket and stuff growing up, and a little bit in my adult life as well. But very, very injury prone, so that got put paid to that pretty quickly. But also from like a kind of a cricket numbers basis, I mean, I can remember being really into like just reading the scorecards in the newspaper when I was like, I don't know, 7 or 8 years old. I've always been pretty like numbers, maths orientated. And I can even remember like, you know, going on holiday when I was like 9 or 10 with my parents, and like the most important thing in my luggage was the pullout averages from that week in the newspaper, so I could like simulate matches and stuff like that on the pad of paper. I can even remember going to the local supermarket looking for a pad of paper because I forgot to take mine with me when I was like a little child and stuff, you know. So it's quite similar to Sean in the fact that it's kind of gone full circle, really, and that something that I was kind of just doing out of fun as a child is like something now that I'm moving into as a career. So that's super, super, it's super exciting for me to be able to do something that I love and enjoy on a daily basis. Just fantastic.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And to be honest, you're doing a very, very good job. I must admit, Dan, I love reading your analysis on social media, of course. It's brilliant. Do go and give Dan a follow, actually. He's very, very good.
Yeah, without doubt. So let's kind of talk a little bit about professional cricket back in those early days. Who would you say your professional cricketing idols were? Who did you really look up to growing up?
Yeah, wow. My personal favourites at Leicestershire, Brian Davison, such an explosive player. I used to love watching him. Andy Roberts as well. You know, I think those two players for me were so exciting, and I used to love watching them. You know, you've got to mention the likes of David Gower when he was in full flow was outstanding. I always liked Aggers as well, watching Aggers here at Leicestershire. I met Aggers a while ago when I went weak at the knees, so that tells you something. But I guess I've also got to mention, because I dare say he will listen to this podcast, so I better mention him, Jack Birkinshaw, our club president. What an absolute legend of the game, top fella. He's only got one weakness, and that is because he supports Leeds United. So we have a bit of banter between each other. He's got the upper hand at the moment, I have to say. But what a great player he was as well. And him and Ray Illingworth, two Yorkshiremen that have done great things at Leicestershire in their careers. So, but my personal two favourites, I would say, were Davison and Andy Roberts.
Some great choices there, Sean. I have to admit, and I'm going to follow that up with a really, really difficult question because you mentioned Andy Roberts. If you had to choose one West Indian seamer, and Dan, I'll ask you the exact same question. Throughout history, who would you choose to lead a seam bowling lineup? Who'd you choose out of those brilliant West Indian seamers?
Go on, Dan, I'll let you go first on that one.
I'll go Curtly Ambrose all day long.
Would you?
Choice.
Yeah.
Whispering Death is
It's his birthday today as well, Michael Holding.
But I've got to stick with Andy Roberts. He's my hero. I'll stick with him. I've got to stick with the Leicester lad.
Fair enough. And Dan, what about you? Who were your early cricketing idols? Who did you look up to in the world of professional cricket?
Okay, so county-wise, I was just kind of just a bit of a badger, but I didn't really have like a specific like I wasn't a fan of a specific team. I grew up in Kent, so I suppose I had a bit of a soft spot for them. But I can remember a lot of county cricket growing up. There was some great teams. So, for example, the Warwickshire team led by Dermot Reeve was a huge one for me growing up. They, you know, they were an extremely successful team. Obviously, they had Brian Lara playing at that time as well. I can remember some kind of notable stuff growing up as well. For England, Graham Gooch with the 3-3-3. And then I remember Atherton and Jack Russell against South Africa, that partnership to stave off Alan Donald et al. And then kind of as I got a bit older, Kevin Peterson was someone that I kind of, you know, I really admired as a player, because when he came through, England weren't really very good. So he dragged them into that almost like the modern time a little bit more. And I think probably now, obviously he's retired now, but now you look at him more as a trendsetter and someone who maybe kind of looked into the future and could see what cricket was going to become. And maybe he wasn't appreciated for those views at that time, but you can see now that he was pretty accurate with how a lot of stuff's developed.
I'd add as well, Aaron, I think for me, modern day one, A.B. de Villiers.
Yes.
You know, I love watching.
Also his birthday today.
Also, yeah.
Oh, is it? Really?
There's a trend there, Sean.
Look at that. We forgot to mention one person, though, Dan. Paul Nixon, what a legend he was.
Yeah,
absolutely. Just in case he's listening, we better mention him as well, I guess.
100%.
Well, yeah, a legend at Grace Road, isn't he, Nico? Absolute hero. And in county cricket, to be fair, he was a brilliant wicketkeeper. Good leader as well, Paul Nixon. Fingers crossed we'll try and get him on the podcast one day. We'll try our best, won't we, Jay? But yeah, you two were mentioning county cricket. What were your first ever memories of county cricket itself then? Because Sean, you mentioned your first ever game at Grace Road. Do you remember who was playing? Obviously Leicestershire, but who were the opposition on that day?
Memory served me right. I think it might have been Kent, you know, when I look back. It was certainly one of the southern teams. It might be Kent or Essex. I've got a sneaking suspicion it was Kent back then. Yeah, I think we got beat as well, actually, if memory serves me right. Because I don't think my dad was too happy when we were driving home. So, I've got, you know, Grace Road has not changed that much in all those years, but I've got some great fond memories of being here and the people. And you know, one of our sort of traits or DNA of the club is the family friendly approach that is here at Grace Road. And I always remember people when my dad would toddle off and go and chat to the chief exec at the time, or Mike Turner, as it was, secretary, it'd leave me watching it and people had chat to you. It's a brilliant place to be, really.
Yeah, I can concur with that. From 2018, actually, Division 2 game, Warwickshire won, actually. And we didn't win the next one. I'll talk about the next one in due course. But yeah, we won that. And I remember having a lovely chat with some of the people on the boundary. It's a nice club. I must admit, I do like Grace Road. Good atmosphere, good setting as well. I do quite like it. And Dan, what about yourself? What was your first ever memory of county cricket? Is there any kind of specific memory that you can kind of draw on?
Yeah, definitely. So I grew up in Tunbridge Wells. So I used to go to the Neville Grounds when Kent had the yearly match there. I remember Kent playing against Warwickshire early on. And then I think they played Sussex quite a lot there when I was younger as well, living down in Kent. When I was playing village cricket a little bit, sometimes I used to sneak in and use the nets with a couple of mates or whatever when we were practicing and stuff as well. So yeah, got good memories of that ground, which is obviously a beautiful ground down in Kent as well. And then I went to university in Canterbury, and I'm not so much county cricket, but it would have either been 98 or 2000. It was the World Cup. They had a match on there, and it was England v Kenya, I remember. And Kenya posted some middling total, and in England probably could have knocked it off after about 20 overs to spare, but ended up like taking the chase for really long, which was
typical England.
That's how England were at that point in time. They weren't the kind of aggressive boundary hitting team that they are these days so much.
Dan, I have to follow up on that one, because two Kenyan players, I have to ask if you saw them or not. First of all, Steve Ticolo. And second, Warwickshire's very own Collins Aboyer. Did you see them on that day?
I think Ticolo was captain maybe that day. I remember there was a guy called Thomas Odio, who I think had a really good game for Kenya that day. Oh, but I'm stretching me about remembering specific players generally, yeah.
Oh, no worries there. It's just I absolutely love those two. Obviously, Collins, he came to us in 2003 Unfortunately, his career did take a bit of a turn after that. But yeah, that was quite a memorable season, I suppose, for the long-term Warwickshire fans. And Steve Ticklow, Brian Lara Cricket 96. You can play that for free on laptop. That guy's an absolute monster. Let me just tell you that for anyone listening. But yes, that's enough about brilliant Kenyan cricketers, although I could talk about those two for absolute days. Sean, I wanted to ask you in particular here, what actually brought you to Leicestershire County Cricket Club? Because you mentioned the connection, but we also talked about earlier the footballing world. You were CEO of Huddersfield Town at the John Smith Stadium. What actually brought you from Yorkshire to Leicestershire? What's the reasoning behind that in the first place?
Yeah, there's a few reasons, really. I mean, I spent 15 years at Huddersfield Town. Prior to that, I was at Oldham Athletic, but 15 years at Huddersfield Town and part of the team that kind of took the Terriers from League One into the Premier League. So sort of a real journey that we went on, and I'd spent a lot of time there. And you know, at one point we were top of the Premier League. I think it was about three or four games into that first year we were top, and I've still got a screenshot of Huddersfield Town at the top, and then Man City, and then Man U underneath. So, I can say that I took my team to the top of the Premier League. But yeah, there comes a point where, you know, you go so far, and sadly, we've been relegated in year two. What more could I achieve at Huddersfield Town? I got lots of friends there. Maybe the challenge was starting to dissipate a little bit for me. So, and prior to that, I'd spent a year being a non-exec director at Leicestershire. So I was kind of getting underneath the bonnet a bit prior to actually coming here. And I had agreed that I would do a year non-exec directorship at Leicestershire to help out. And the year was coming to an end. And you could see that Leicestershire was in a bit of a bad way. But I'd done my bit for a year. I'd kind of contributed. And I thought, well, I can do no more. And, you know, I had to go back to the day job sort of thing. And then the chair approached me and sort of said, you know, look, you see what sort of situation we're in. You know, we need somebody of your expertise to come here and help us out. And I couldn't resist, really. My heartstrings, because of what I've sort of said, the connections with my family. This is my hometown. This is the very first club that I came to. I was, as I say, really disappointed with how we performed over the past 10 years. And that was the reason for me getting involved, to try and make a difference or change it. And then the opportunity came where the chair approached me and sort of said, look, you know, you can make a real difference here by becoming chief exec. So I drove back to Yorkshire that night and sort of had chatted to my wife. And within 5 miles, I'd made my mind up that it was the right thing for me to do and come here. And yeah, I'm knocking on a bit now. I've had a hard paper round and all that, but I want to do something that's going to change the fortunes of this club and put us back on the map. And, you know, I'll do my bit. I'll contribute my bit, but that's my motivation, is to really give something back to my hometown and put Leicestershire where I believe it can be. And that's a successful, sustainable cricket club.
Well, that is a fantastic response, Sean. It really is. And actually, I want to ask you both this, because you mentioned about taking Leicestershire to where they belong and where they deserve to be, per se. Where do you two see Leicestershire going within the foreseeable future? I'm guessing silverware is a massive ambition of yours. But what in specifics? Are you looking to absolutely dominate the county circuit? Are you looking to be that sustainable club which can maybe generate an era of dominance with a good young core of players? What are you two actually looking to achieve during your time at Leicestershire County Cricket Club?
Yeah, probably best if I go first. I think for me, you enter a competition to win it. And that goes without saying, you know. So whatever we do, whatever competition we are in, whether that be the 4-day or the white ball stuff, we're in it to win it. Mm-hmm. It's how you win it. It's how you get to win it. And for me, I want silverware. And I'm sure we'll talk about that picture again in a minute. But I want silverware. I want us to be successful. It's then how you actually try and create that success. And you'll have hopefully you've seen a phrase that we refer to, which is called the Academy of Cricket. Mm-hmm. And you know, Leicestershire does not have the big budgets that the other clubs maybe have. So we've got to work hard. We've got to use every pound that we spend. We've got to try and get bang for our buck or return on our investment. But I'm a believer that Leicestershire is a great place of cricketing talent. You look at our DNA and the people like Stuart Broad, Darren Maddy, James Taylor, you know, Chris Lewis, Agnew, Gower, could go on and on and on. They've all come through. They've all been part of our journey. And I think they're the people that we want playing for us. And I want young, hungry, dynamic, professional, athletic players that are fighting for the cause here at the Running Foxes and that are what I would describe as good students of the game who want to better themselves. Sadly, we may have to accept that they may go to Warwickshire, they may go to Nottinghamshire, but there might come a tipping point where they actually turn around and go, no, I'm staying put. I believe in this bigger cause. And in the process, we'll get bigger and better, stronger commercially. We'll develop the ground in due course, I'm sure. And I think Leicestershire can be pioneering and can be the envy of a lot of, if not all, of the cricket clubs in first-class cricket. So we've got a journey to go, and you know, Dan here is part of that journey, and I want people who are committed off the field as well, so who are committed to the cause. Anybody that's not got a Running Fox running through their veins, I don't want them here. We've all got to fight. We the moment that we cross that line here, we are fighters. We're winners. We want to win. We're hungry. We're determined. You know, Foxes never quit is a phrase that our neighbours use, and there's no difference here at Leicestershire County Cricket Club. So they're the traits that I really want Leicestershire to be renowned for, and along the way, you know, have that silverware. You know, we've got a great heritage, 70s mm-hmm. and the 90s, you know, the T20 stuff. We've got good heritage, so no reason why we can't bring that here. I'm not scared of anybody, and if you ask me, can we win something? Yeah, of course we can, and that's what I want. It's going to be tough, but look how close we came last year from mm-hmm. having the youngest squad in the T20. We were the only team in the T20 not to get beat in the finals. We actually got eliminated because of the tie, but that's another story. So that's where I kind of see it, and I think Dan, that I would hope Dan echoes that, but he might have maybe a different perspective of what he sees as well.
Well, no, for me, we're only going to become successful if we adhere to these processes that Sean mentioned. Identification of talent, looking for the market inefficiencies, things like that, that we have to try and exploit to take advantage of the situation where maybe we have a lower budget than the other teams. And success can be measured in so many ways. For example, before Sean and I joined the club last year, the club was coming from a pretty low basis. So already we've had some success in how we performed last year, I think. And that's something that we can measure tangibly. But moving forward, of course, we want to win trophies. That's going to be a difficult process because there's only three trophies and there's 18 teams competing for those trophies every year. But, of course, that's a goal that we have to try and aim for, that progress to get to that level where we're consistently fighting for trophies, consistently qualifying out of the knockout stages in the white ball, getting into Division 1 in the county championship and competing at the top end of Division 1. These are all massive ambitions that I think we really need to focus on. And I'm... You know, I love working at Leicestershire with Sean, with Nico, and we're all pulling in the right direction to try and achieve those targets. We're all super committed to try and do that. And I think with a lot of organisation, good communication, everyone pulling in the same direction, a good strategy and a good plan, then we're going to have a big advantage, I think, over a lot of other teams who maybe don't necessarily have that. We're a really tight group. We can get decisions done quickly. We've seen that with some overseas players that we've brought in already. We can, from identification to signing, it doesn't have to be a long process. So we've got some advantages, even being a kind of a smaller county, if you like. We've got some advantages over bigger counties who maybe have more structure and politics, if you like. So we've got we're very ambitious, and I'm super optimistic about how things are going to go for us.
Yeah, I would add as well. I mean, a team is about a combined belief. Mm-hmm. As chief exec, I'm the conductor of an orchestra, and it's about the people in the orchestra that make the music. And you know, people like Dan here are incredibly important to us. You know, part of the orchestra, as is my catering manager, as is Paul Nixon, Tom Smith, Callum Parkinson. You know, they're all part of the bigger picture. And I think if we have got this combined belief, it is such a powerful tool. And what we want to do as well is use the phrase again, be students, good students of the game. And that is utilizing Dan's skill set as well as Paul Nixon's skill set. There's a whole mix of things that we actually are throwing into the equation that are hopefully trying to improve the way that we approach our games and approach our business. You know, for example, we did a little deal with Stance Beam recently, and that has kind of helped a little bit in training. So I've seen the benefits of getting that involved, and that, and then filters down to our academy as well. So there's all these things. And I think for me, I think Leicestershire, whilst we're not the biggest, and as Dan said, you know, we can be nimble footed in our size. And I think that's where we can actually get out there and hopefully just ruffle the marketplace up a little bit. And you just never know. You never know what might happen. I did look at our odds the other day, and if I was allowed to bet, I'd put some money on us, because I think we're good dark horses.
I think that's a fantastic way of putting it. And just for the listeners out there, as Dan and Sean were speaking there, you could just see the grins getting wider and wider and wider. These two firmly believe in this. I can tell just by looking at their body language, the way in which they're actually talking. It's obviously a massive, massive ambition of yours. And you're definitely both very, very motivated to take Leicestershire to that next level. And I guess that Leicestershire fans out there, you're going to be absolutely lapping this up, because I know I would be if this was Warwickshire talking to me in the same way. But just talking of those ambitions then, before we go into the specifics of 2021, I suppose we have to talk a bit about 2020, because it was, let's face it, a very, very peculiar year, to say the least. We didn't have a full season. We didn't even have a county championship or a one-day cup trophy. It was the Bob Willis Trophy and the T20 Blast. And Sean, you alluded to it earlier, that absolute heartbreak in the quarterfinal. Joe, do you remember watching that game by any chance?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I watched like right near the end. I switched it on. Like, I watched a bit of Leicester's innings, and then I did something else, and then watched the end of Notts' innings. And it was, I mean, it was one of them games, wasn't it, where the pendulum kind of swung?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to be honest, for a lot of the game, I thought Leicester have this pretty comfortably. And then obviously it just was brought back at the end. I think it was Samit, wasn't it, batting at the end?
Or was it Imad?
Both of them.
Was it both of them? And then obviously they just kind of brought it back. And it was pretty, to be honest, it was a great game of cricket. Mm-hmm. It was, I'm a total neutral in this, so it was also great TV as well. But I can't imagine how disappointing it must have been for Leicester.
Yeah, gutted for them. I wanted, yeah. Although in saying that, I wanted to get them in for fielding practice the next day. They gave it their all. They tried everything, and I think I was so proud of all of them at the end of it. But sometimes losing can be a good thing. And I would hope our lads now kind of reflect on that and actually go, do you know what? I want to go one further. And that's what I'm looking for from them.
Yeah. I mean, as you say, it was kind of a learning curve, really. As, you know, long-term, looking into 2021, obviously we don't entirely know roughly what's going to happen in 2021. We know the schedule, and that's about it. But yeah, I guess it is a learning curve. But Dan, what was that like for you, that specific game? Like, how did you kind of, as an analyst, deal with that? Because it was, as I say, the pendulum was swinging. It was so confusing, almost, from a losing a win point of view. So how did you kind of deal with that?
Well, when we were batting, obviously we struggled a lot at the start. I think we lost 3 wickets after about just over 6 overs, which is generally not a positive sign in T20. But Harry Swindles played a gem of an innings to get us up to a score that we thought thought we might be able to have a chance of defending. We were probably still underdogs at halfway, but we had a chance. We had a score on the board that maybe we weren't looking like hitting at some points. So that was a start. And then it got to a stage where I think Akers and Parky slowed them down quite a lot. And I think it got to a stage where they needed double digits and over with about five or six out. And I was pretty confident with our chances at that point because I knew that the Gavin Griffiths and Will Davis are good death bowlers and would have the skill set to be able to try and restrict them. And the pitch wasn't conducive to high scoring, which is quite unusual at Trent Bridge as well. It's usually a high par venue. So, I was pretty confident. But then, obviously, we know how the match played out. And there's nothing you can say about that because at the end of the day, they're just isolated incidents which show the volatility variance of professional sport and the fine margins that it takes to win a match or win a tournament. And that's what it boils down to. As Sean mentioned about getting the lads in for some fielding practice after the match, but you know, internally we've looked at some metrics that measure fielding success, and actually we are one of the best fielding teams in the group in the tournament. So really, you can't put it down to anything apart from bad luck and just one in 100 event probably happening twice in two overs, and that's it. Sometimes it does go down to those margins.
Yeah. And I mean, we've literally seen that on literally the biggest stage, you know, Jason Roy fumbled in the World Cup final super over. So it literally can happen anyway. And as you say, I mean, he picked the ball up cleanly, what, three balls later?
When he so needed.
Yeah, 99 times out of 100, you know, that's not happening. So it is one of them. Yeah. But looking at T20 cricket as a whole, this is something I'm quite interested, especially you, Dan, to get your opinion on as an analyst. I seem to remember, if I remember rightly, in that quarterfinal, Callum Parkinson actually opened the bowling. How do you feel about spinners opening the ball in T20 cricket? Do you think that is the way every team should go, regardless of the wicket or any conditions or anything? Or generally, do you think that's not a... Or do you think that's more of a thing suited per team?
Yeah, I think it's very situational based. So Parky's obviously got very good numbers in the power play and has really, really improved in that area. So having multi-phase bowlers is so useful for a T20 team. So Parky's obviously a real asset for us. He's bowling in the power play, he's bowling middle overs and doing a great job. So yeah, that's good for us. But I think a lot of it boils down to how you think the opposition are going to play, what matchups you can throw at them and things like that. So, you know, some matches it might be quite suitable to go pace heavy, other times spin heavy. And it really is match dependent, pitch dependent and kind of very situational. I definitely wouldn't say that, you know, there's an overwhelming view one way or the other. It's just you got to treat each match and each opponent and each player on their merits, really. It's interesting because I saw, like, in IPL, for example, I was really surprised how little spin was bowled in the power play, and they went real pace heavy, most teams. And maybe I think sometimes the IPL teams missed a couple of tricks about looking at spin matchups early on. But yeah, I mean, leg spinners tend to bowl a lot less in the power play as well. So they're almost primarily middle overs, whereas some, you know, finger spinners tend to bowl a little bit more in the power play. So yeah, it's kind of a horses for courses thing, really, I think.
Yeah.
That's a good question, Joe. And Dan, you have just mentioned the magical M-word, matchups. We asked this to Canal, who is Nottinghamshire's analyst. At Leicestershire County Cricket Club, are you really concerned with matchups, or are they maybe a bit overhyped? How do you look at matchups per se for the Running Foxes?
I think it's important, and I think it's a part of our processes, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they'll always be adhered to. You know, I'll give Nico and Sean and all the management team a rundown of what I think the matchup should be for a particular match, but at the end of the day, that's Akers' decision as captain whether he wants to adopt those. He's on the pitch, he's got the feel of the match as well, so all of these things kind of have to be taken into account. Yeah, I think it's important, and certainly this, you know, overwhelming matchups I think are really important to go as a route to go down. But I listened to Canal's segment on the matchups as well. And I think he mentioned something about a Matt Critchley against left arm pace. And I won't be telling you anything about that because all that stuff we're going to have to keep to ourselves to try and get every marginal game we can.
Well, yeah, we weren't expecting any like specific matchups, per se. But yeah, Interesting to know that you have got them up the sleeve, though, of course. And I imagine that's true with every single county. I suppose if you're watching enough footage, getting in, enough data, some are bound to pop up, aren't they? It's as simple as that. But we're speaking there about 2020, and I just want to get both of your views on how the season actually went. How would you assess the 2020 season? Because in the Bob Willis Trophy, perhaps slightly underwhelming. And then in the T20 Blast, I think you did very well. You pipped us to the post, of course. We lost in heartbreaking fashion against Northants, thanks to Tom Taylor, a former podcast guest here on TCCP. But looking back in retrospect, Sean, how would you, first of all, assess the 2020 season for the Running Foxes?
Yeah, it was an incredibly intense season with all the COVID stuff and everything. So it was challenging. But you probably describe the Bob Willis Trophy as a learning curve. Mm. You know, I sort of set an early target for Nico to not finish bottom. You know, Leicestershire had been bottom and just sort of show improvement, show progression. And you know, when you look back on it, that first game against Lancashire, you know, it was brilliant. It ended up being like a T20 game.
It was a good game.
Cracking match, you know, and to beat them, we'd had a little bit of a tussle during the prior to the season with Lancashire about where we should be playing the game. So there was a bit of difference of opinion, shall we say, between us and Lancashire. So I was fired up, and it was my sort of first official game, and delighted that we came out victors. So at that point, I thought we're invincible. I thought that's it. We're going to be the Man City of cricket here, you know. But we did see, you know, we got a young squad, and that was one of the highlights for me during the season, was that we actually fielded the youngest squad in the history of Leicestershire County Cricket Club, you know, ever since we were established in 1879, I think it was. So I was delighted with a fact like that. And then looking at some of the performances of the players, with youth, you're going to get an element of inexperience and inconsistency that comes with it. But then you look at it, and I was chuffed. I was delighted for them the way that they progressed. I think for me, it shows promise. It shows promise. And we've talked about, you know, Dan and myself and Paul Nixon and Tom Smith, etc., and the players. We talk now about how we go on a step. You know, where do we progress to? And I come back to my original comment. We go in to win the competition. You know, irrespective of whatever, we enter the competition to win. But, you know, we want to progress. I want to see progression from our players. And I look at last season, Callum Parkinson, great season, both in the Bob Willis and T20, and he's been rewarded by being our VC. So for me, you know, yes, we didn't set the world alight, but I saw progression and I saw green shoots there that actually... I think Leicestershire have got something, and we've got work to do, and we've been doing that during the winter period, and some of the stats we've been looking at, things like that. So yeah, let's progress. T20, well, we're a strong side, you know. I fear no one, and I think, you know, for us, why not go a step further and get that silverware? And coming back to that picture, that's up there for a reason. Paul Nixon has got to bring that down. That's when Chris Schindler took Huddersfield to the Premier League, the moment he kicked the penalty to secure a Premier League place for Huddersfield. I said to Paul Nixon, he has to bring that down. The only way he brings that down is by having a moment for Leicestershire of us lifting some silverware. So it's up there to remind him every single day he comes into my office, bring that down. So maybe 21 might be the year that we pick up a bit of silverware and that picture comes down. You just never know.
We'll have to wait and see. Dan, what about your views? Also, obviously, from an analyst perspective, Sean was talking there about green shoots, all of these fantastic young players coming through. What's it like from your perspective? Because obviously you work very closely with these guys pretty much on a daily basis, looking at their stats, averages, etc. What's it like from your opinion?
Yeah, so from my perspective, I agree with Sean completely. It showed that progress, that potential that we can grow into. Mm-hmm. Now, this can be measured in so many different ways. So, for example, points per game is an increase from the year before, but also a lot of other underlying metrics as well, how the group performed against different types of bowling, how the batting went as a group, things like that. And then that even though the season was a bit shortened, it's enabled us to to kind of reflect on how things went, reflect on things from a numbers basis, and look to kind of address areas. And you know, we can use data to address different areas. So you can look at it to help players train. So for example, we might have identified areas that we need to improve at, and the winter training might be focused on that. But then also for the recruitment as well, it shows us some gaps in the squad potentially that we've been looking to try and fill. So there's a lot of ways about that we could approach that. And I think the season for me was real progress. And you know, we already showed signs of punching above our weight. We beat Lancs in the Bob Willis. We beat Notts in the group stages. And we're the only team to beat Notts in the whole competition in T20. And obviously, you know, we were within one run of beating them in the quarterfinal. And personally, from my perspective, I wouldn't have feared anyone on finals day. I genuinely felt that we would have had a great chance against anyone in finals day. So, yeah, we're making progress. We've made a few additions, as you mentioned earlier. So I think that the shoots are definitely there in terms of moving forward in the future, real progression. And I think that we could surprise a few people next year.
I think what 2020 has taught us as well is our decision-making processes, how we improve the decisions we make. And that's not just necessarily on the field as well, it's off it. So we've got an infrastructure in place now that challenges, that actually reflects on stuff and actually poses tough questions. You know, I remember the first time I met Dan, you know, here at the ground, and I said to him that I don't want somebody who's going to sort of say yes to Paul Nixon, you know, who's actually going to push him and actually real challenge him and sort of say, why are you as a head coach, why are you making that decision? And that's what we have to be. When we close our gates here at Grace Road, you know, we'll thrash it out. We'll have a real debate about how we develop, how we progress. When we open the gates, we're in it together. Everybody stands shoulder to shoulder. So we've got that culture right at Leicestershire, and long may that continue, really.
Absolutely. And before we talk about 2021, I just have to pull you up on that point. Purely because, Dan, I want to ask you a question. how often do you challenge Nico's opinion? And what's been the, I don't know, not the most explosive, but has there been a notable disagreement per se?
Yeah, well, we're gonna have disagreements because that's cricket. That everyone's gonna have different opinions. The challenge for me is to try and show evidence-based rationale as to why my point of view should be taken into account. If I can't do that, then I'm failing at my job, basically. So then ultimately the decision's gonna lie with Nico and Sean ultimately. Mm-hmm. So I can provide my input and I'm so well backed by Nico and Sean in terms of, you know, what I say. I couldn't ask for better support from those guys. So, yeah, we challenge each other all the time. I speak to Nico pretty much every day, multiple times a day often. We're always messaging each other, discussing players and tactics and strategy and stuff. So yeah, we always, you know, we don't always have to agree, but I think that's very, very healthy. I wouldn't want it to be a situation where we always agree on everything. We've got to come to a consensus, and I think that's so important. But like 99% of the time, we're agreeing anyway. But having that challenge process, making sure that all the decisions are really evidence based, is so important. So for me, like, I love the challenge. It's not a problem at all for me. I think it's really, really ideal, actually.
I would add as well, Aaron and Joe, we have a real appetite to learn as well, you know, this whole Academy of Cricket concept. And even the other day, Dan sent me a message about Stuart Webber, who's at Norwich City, doing a great job at Norwich City. And I used to work with Stuart. So we're actually going to get Stuart into one of our meetings and learn that kind of knowledge, learn that knowledge from other sports, you know, and bring it to us. And I think that's what Leicestershire, we're kind of a bit of a sponge. We want to learn, we want to develop, we want to progress. And that goes throughout the club. You know, that is Paul Nixon as well. He, you know, he's a relatively new coach, so he's learning. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all kind of got this appetite, and I use a phrase again, you know, to be good students of the game, really.
Well, yeah, I think everybody can tell, because myself and Joe, haven't we? We've been talking for weeks about the Quiet Revolution, and I'm so happy. Honestly, you don't understand how happy I am that we get to finally talk about it in depth on this podcast. It's been weeks coming, if not months. So this is definitely living up to the bill so far. But I suppose we have to get to the part of the podcast where we talk about 2021, because we've been talking about it for so many weeks now. It has been incredibly busy down at Grace Road. It really has. And just for the listeners out there, just bear with me for a minute while I read all of this information out, because this has been building up for weeks. But first of all, one of the big things for Leicestershire was going back to the classic green and red. Yes, so before we talk about anything else in terms of the recruitment, in terms of the partnership with Cape Cobras, that's another thing I wanted to touch upon. Where did that actually come from? Sean, did you have any potential hand in that, per se?
The green and red, yeah. I felt that Leicestershire had kind of lost its identity along the way, and that it just felt, you kind of have a feeling for the fan base and the supporters out there. And it felt that we needed to go back to our heritage.
Mm-hmm.
So we had in my first few months here, I had a big debate with the commercial team and the marketing team here, and sort of said, no, look, we are going to green and red. We're going back to it. And it's been very well received. And over the coming years, you'll see more and more green and red appearing in our branding. We've got a new website coming out April time, so you'll see that'll really get that message across there. You know, when you actually arrive, you'll see signage and all those sort of things. I can't afford to do it all in one go, but we'll do it in stages. So for me, it was so important that we kind of went, look, who are we? What do we stand for? What are we about? And green and red is for me, is Leicestershire. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the word gold there. And I've actually now made the decision that gold foxes do not exist. We only give gold foxes to people that really, really earn the credit to be a gold fox. And the captain, Colin, will get one of those, you know, that's. But what used to happen in past, we used to get an overseas player come in and then automatically get a gold fox. Well, I'm changing that. You earn a gold fox. And even staff behind the scene, I will give them the ability to earn the right to have a gold fox. So there's real meaning and real value to it. And that's, again, it's all about this culture that we're wanting to create. So the green and red culture is there. It stands for who we are. The gold fox means you've really got gold fox standards. So it was important, and I'm delighted. It was risky. You kind of have to take risks, but I felt it was the right thing to do. And for me, it feels like it's been well received, and our fan base have adopted to it. So yeah, you know, when we bring out the kits, they might change their mind, but we'll see what happens when that comes out.
Yeah, well, I have to be honest. Last season's one day shirt wasn't my favourite for Leicester's. And normally I'm quite picky on kits, like anything for like any sport. And yeah, last season's one day shirt, yeah, pink and blue, it wasn't for me, but yeah. I mean, I'm a massive fan of tradition as well, so as a neutral it would be good to see traditional colours back. I mean, like, not still last year, you know, they got their old badge back. In 4-day cricket, and I thought that was really, really good. Yeah, I'm definitely.
I think you're right, Joe. You said the magic word there, the tradition. Whilst we describe ourselves as a new breed of fox and a new way of doing things, you've always, always got to respect your tradition, what you are as a club, what you stand for. And I think if you lose sight of that, you lose sight of who you are, what your identity is, what your DNA is. And I think even something as simple as red and green, that's part of our DNA. It's part of our identity.
Definitely,
so
yeah.
Embrace it, you know.
Definitely, yeah.
Absolutely.
Sorry, just to clarify, is a gold fox, I'm not sure what a gold fox is. Is that the same as, because when you get a county cap at Lancs, before you're capped, it's like a closed red rose. And then when you get one, it's an open rose. That's what a gold fox is.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Right,
okay. So yeah. All right.
So you have the red fox.
Yeah. Yeah. And gold. Then it goes gold. Yeah. Sorry. I just had to clarify that.
Yeah. To be honest, I didn't know that before. So that's also something that I've learned. But yeah. Talking of, I suppose, tradition and heritage, though, I'll tell you someone else who'll like it, Paul Nixon. transport him back, won't it? When he was playing in green and red. So I bet he'll enjoy it. And talking of the progression of the Foxes then, before we talk about recruitment, because as I said, a lot's been going on, I just wanted to really focus in on that new partnership with Cape Cobras as part of the Global Club Cricket Network. And Sean, you've had a massive role to play in the setting up of this. Could you just explain to us a bit more about what the network actually is and what it entails for the future?
Yeah, it's embryonic stages, so it's early days. But I wanted to sort of share experiences and knowledge with clubs around the world. And my intention is to try and create a link with a team from Australia, a team from South Africa, a team from Pakistan, India, you know, even develop links with US and emerging nations. So I'm very, very keen on that. And I think it will evolve as we go along. You know, David Brooke at Cape Cobras, we've had a couple of conversations and we've shared some ideas. And it's more on a commercial level at this stage, but you can sort of see things evolving. So, for example, I've been chatting to our academy, our head of academy, Ali Maiden, and talking about, well, could we do something where we send our academy out to Cape Town and David and the Cape Cobras will look after them. So it's going to evolve. It's going to develop over a period of time. And there are two clubs I'm kind of talking to at the moment. You can sort of see that some of the clubs are a little bit reserved about it to begin with. But I think you'll see that, again, that tipping point whereby more and more clubs and will become part of it. And what I want us to do is then just, you know, with technology in the COVID period, learn about Zoom. We can now all meet up and chat away and discuss and sort of discuss things about how we can help each other. And we're already talking about, for example, with the Cape Cobras, they've got a title sponsor in
Sun Grill.
Sun Grill. Yeah. So, you know, maybe Sun Grill can come over here at some point and Upton Steel can go over there. So there's little things like that you can begin to develop and evolve. So it's early days, but we're excited by it. We'll take it steady. And I think, again, you come back to the how does it improve the decision-making process? And that's what we do. We look at Cape Cobras. What do they do? Are there things that they do that we can learn from and vice versa? And that'll just raise our standards through all different parts of Leicestershire County Cricket Club. And that's what I'm keen for us to do, really.
100%. And yeah, as I said,
it's really cool concept.
Yeah, it's an interesting initiative, isn't it, Jay?
Mm, definitely. And I guess, I mean, I don't know how to what extent cricket-wise this is going to go, but I guess there's even a, you know, potential, as you say, you want to link up with clubs all around the world. Who's to say you won't get overseas players from just these clubs, you know? There's this kind of, that kind of link, or like, I don't know, a competition where you play all of these things. It kind of reminds me of the Knight Riders group. Yes. Who obviously have franchises in the West Indies, in India, and now in America as well. That's obviously, I'm not saying it's going to be, again, to that kind of branding level, but it's that kind of, reminds me of that a little bit. So, yeah, it's a really cool concept.
Yeah, definitely. And for me, if I'm ever out in Cape Town, I get to watch a free game as well. So
exactly. So it's not exactly a bad place to play, is it? Sorry, to watch. Or to play.
Or to play, yeah.
Not exactly a bad place, yeah.
Not all. Yeah, Newlands, what a ground. What a ground. And David as well. A lovely bloke as well. Spoken to him on a couple of occasions. He was kind enough to give me a photo of Newlands for my Instagram work. So big up David at the Cape Cobras.
Top fella.
Absolutely. Yeah, very, very nice. But I suppose now we finally get to talk about recruitment. And Dan, I can see your eyes lighting up because this is going to be your time to shine, mate. Just for the listeners out there, just bear with me because there is a lot of talk in terms of contract extensions and signings. But here we go. So in terms of Leicestershire's contract extensions, Callum Parkinson, Aaron Lilley, Ben Mike, Hassan Azad, Chris Wright, Alex Evans, Sam Bates, Will Davis, Nathan Bowley, Gavin Griffiths and Lewis Hill. They've all signed contracts. And then in terms of new signings, you got our former podcast guest, Scott Seal. He came from Durham. Ed Barnes has moved from Yorkshire. Rishi Patel has come from Essex. Vion Mulder. Now, these are the two that I really want to take an in-depth look into. Vion Mulder has come in as an overseas signing for the County Championship and Royal London One Day Cup. And Naveen Ul-Haq, the Afghan seamer, has come in for the T20 Blast. So, Dan, I'll start with you. What was the reasoning behind these players? Was there anything specific that you were looking for in terms of, I don't know, attributes or statistically wise that really drew these players to you personally?
There's a lot of things that will go into our recruitment, some of which I can try and talk about now, some of which is probably, you know, it's quite difficult to do so. But I think what you can look at with those players as a group, in terms of the ones we brought in, is there's a big common denominator, and that is age and probably having a point to prove. And that's something that I think Sean and I and Nico are very, very much aligned on in terms of our strategy and how we want to approach our recruitment and how we want to approach squad building going forward as a group. So, for example, we already had the core of quite a lot of young players at the club, but, you know, prior to those signings. And we'd lost Mark Cosgrove, Neil Dexter and Paul Horton, who are on the older end of the age curve. So we kind of had the opportunity to try and bring some players in and out. And they're all quite a similar age in their early 20s. And what we're maybe hoping to do is to develop them so that they can all get towards peak age all at the same time. And then almost have that kind of conveyor belt of young talent, which is coming through on a regular basis. We're going to look to identify as time moves on. Obviously, we've done some of that now already, and that's going to continue to be the case. I think both Sean and I are extremely passionate about that type of angle in terms of recruitment, and it's personally something that I firmly believe in. So yeah, absolutely, that's one real common denominator straight away. Obviously, each player has got different attributes as well that we would have identified and gone through a lot of due diligence for us to try and understand, one, where they're at now, two, what potential they might have in the future, and three, where they might fit into our squad as well, because there's no good stockpiling players if they're not going to get game time, if they're not going to get opportunities, they're not going to have that ability to improve because they're not getting game time. So it's really important that we don't just identify specific players who we think are good enough, but also specific players who fit into perhaps the gaps in our squad currently as well, so that they're all going to get opportunities and grow with each other all at the same time.
Absolutely. And as I said, I did just want to touch upon those two overseas signings in particular, because these really piqued my interest, really. Because Vion Mulder has been fantastic in South Africa in domestic cricket for the Lions, really, really consistent performer in four-day cricket in particular, has gone on to really achieve some good things in Test cricket as well, as absolutely fantastic in the Sri Lanka series. And Naveen Ul Haq, 21 years of age, young Afghan seamer, really clever with his changes of pace. Love watching him with those cutters and slower balls in the Caribbean Premier League in the T10, for example. What was it about those two that really drew them to Leicestershire County Cricket Club? I know, Dan, you can't go into ridiculous specifics, but was there anything that you can tell us about those players which really piqued your interest, per se?
Yeah, so both players I've been watching in terms of how I pegged them as young players with high potential for quite a long time now. So I actually, before I joined Leicestershire, I was doing some freelance recruitment work for a few other counties, and just on sort of as and when basis, really. And I actually recommended Vian to Kent before they signed him a couple of years ago as well. So he played in Div 1 a few games for them before he got injured. And so, yeah, he was someone who's been on my radar for like 3 years. It's probably a bit cliched, but like the new Jack Callis, if you like. That skill set was something that I felt that we needed as a team, and obviously Sean and Nico agreed on that as well in terms of what we wanted to try and achieve from that particular signing. He's a young player who I think has got massive potential and can contribute both with bat and ball, which is extremely valuable and allows us to maybe structure up our team a little bit differently depending on from match to match, if you like. With Naveen, I've been watching him for pretty much about 18 months now. Obviously, as you say, he's got that quite unorthodox action with a lot of different changes of pace variations. He's someone who I think is comfortable bowling in all three phases, so it gives us planning flexibility as well. And he's an excellent player. He's a passionate player as well. You see that with the send-offs that he gives a batsman sometimes. and again, these players have got points to prove. You know, they're breaking into the international scene. Naveen has got ambitions, obviously, to play IPL, things like that as well. So these players are motivated. They've got points to prove. They're young players. Should be on a nice upward curve in terms of their ability, and their current ability levels are also very, very good as well. So, yeah, there's kind of a bit of the rationale, some basic rationales to why we signed those players.
Well, yeah, of course.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, we couldn't have asked for too many specifics, obviously, and, you know, in-depth parameters.
I can't give too much away. Exactly. But one thing I will ask, actually, is, again, I don't know if this will be given too much away, but do you kind of scout these younger overseas players as players to keep on for the future? Let's say in 3, 4, 5 years' time, these will still be your overseas consistently. I mean, we've seen literally Jeetan Patel has done that for 11 years at Warwickshire. James Faulkner's done that for years at Lancs. Do you see, you know, these kind of guys, that's how you go about it?
From my perspective, obviously, if the situation dictates...
Of course, situation.
Yeah, because, you know, if we can build a relationship with a player where they come back year after year and we have that continuity is so important with team building as well. So, yeah, if that situation arises, then, of course, we would definitely look to try and achieve that. The problem is now, especially with players and they're playing... So, for example, Jeetan Patel wasn't really playing a lot of international cricket because they had Dan Vettori kind of blocking his international progress. Faulkner probably to some extent the same in Australia. So it's so difficult. If you're recruiting internationals, it's so difficult to have them full season year on year.
Yeah.
So it really has to be... kind of, it's almost dependent on future tours programmes and things like that as well. It's the overseas recruitment is something, since I started working with Leicestershire in particular, is something that I've kind of realised is actually extremely more complicated than it looks. It looks like
you should just pick a best player that you can afford and buy him. Yeah. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, exactly that. And it's far from straightforward. So Sean will be able to give you some insight on that as well. But yeah, it's certainly quite a difficult process sometimes.
Yeah. I'd sort of say as well that we also want a player that believes in our vision as well, the three lads, domestic lads that we've signed in Richie, Scott and Ed. Now, we all had good conversations with them and talked to them about what we're trying to achieve. And they all believe in the process and what we're trying to do. And you know what? I've got to say, I've got to pay credit to them. Their attitude to actually what, you know, the project that is Leicestershire is outstanding. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely outstanding. Three great lads who have fitted in as well, really care about what we're trying to achieve. So that's important as well to us, you know, that they don't just come here and pick up a paycheck. They want to do what we want to do.
They want to win.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
Definitely. And we could tell that with Scott, because when we had him on the podcast, he was absolutely beaming. He was absolutely loving it. This wasn't even that long into his days at Leicestershire. But yeah, he still seems very, very enthusiastic. He's definitely buying into the team ethos. And that is massive. As you said, you can't just have a guy coming in, rocking up to training, giving it his, I don't know, about 80% and then just taking home the paycheck. You can't have that. You've got to have guys who buy into the process itself. Absolutely imperative in sport. But I do just have a question for you two. And it's almost flipping the script per se, because it's all good having young players. But if I'm just going to play a bit of devil's advocate here, do you worry about a lack of experience in this team per se? Because I was looking at these stats with regards to the average age at Leicestershire County Cricket Club right now. And going through your squad heading into 2021, the average age is 24.6. And if we're just going to compare that to some of the other teams in the North Group per se, you've got Lancashire have got 26.04, Nottinghamshire, who of course are the defending T20 Blast champions, with 27.4. And then everyone's favourite county, arguably, Warwickshire County Cricket Club, 25.16. So do either of you two, I don't know, worry a little bit about inexperience in the short term? Or is that something which you're not overly concerned about?
Go on, Dan, I'll let you go first.
Right, okay. Thanks, Sean. No, not really, because the situation is that these young players, they're only going to get better if they get in game time, exposure and opportunities. Yeah. They're not going to learn playing second 11 cricket somewhere else. They're going to learn playing first team cricket for us. And if they make mistakes, that's just part of the learning process. That is how they get better. That exposure is getting better. And the next time, if the next time they're in that situation, they're going to do it better the second time. And so Sean mentioned Stuart Webber earlier on in the podcast. And he's someone I spend a lot of time listening to in terms of podcasts, videos, any articles I can read about. I think he's doing a fantastic job at Norwich. And I believe in a lot of his ethos as well. And he mentioned a very, very similar thing in terms of, if you're playing young players, you have to have those realistic expectations that they're going to make mistakes. A lot of the time, how do you measure success? How are you looking at a long-term plan? Sometimes winning a trophy immediately with a group of young players is sometimes an unrealistic proposition. But the long-term strategy for us is that we have to be in a position to do that in the medium and long term. So yeah, it's something that I think is a good area for us to exploit, like in terms of our recruitment. But also, yeah, these players are going to learn, they're going to get better, and they're all going to get better at roughly the same age as well. And that's very, very important. And I think what we want to try and achieve is to become a county that's renowned for giving young players opportunity, be it from either the academy or from external recruitment. And we want to be, a team that if we approach a player, they're going to say, oh, I really want to go there, because I'm going to get game time, I'm going to get opportunity, I'm going to grow with the team, and hopefully we're going to improve all at the same time as a team, and the players can grow with us rather than perhaps in the past with Leicestershire, players have outgrown the team and gone to somewhere else. We don't want that. We want players to grow with us, all go through the process together and all become high quality all at the same time.
Yeah. I can't add too much more what Dan has said there, which is absolutely spot on. We do have a sprinkling of the older heads in there, Chris Wright, Colin Ackerman to a degree. But I also think that some of our more senior pros, now it's time for them to step up to the plate and take the younger kids by the hand and sort of say, right, well, look, this is how you do it. So you look at people like Aaron Lilly, who's got a role to play. So, but there's that old phrase, isn't there? Somebody once said, you never win anything with kids. So I think Man United went on to win the lot, didn't they? So you never know.
Just about.
I was going to say, Joe, I'm very proud. Pipe up.
I'm very, very proud of our positioning, the Academy of Cricket, the development of young talent. As Dan sort of said, the dynamics of the team there are really good. So yeah, we're in a good spot, and we're in a strong spot. We're ready to learn, we're ready to develop, we're ready to take on what we need to take on. And I say, when I've watched our players in training, they're hungry, that want to succeed, and I think it hurt them in that T20. You can see that. And Paul Nico told me about the changing rooms afterwards. They've learned from that, so they're that bit wiser, they're that bit better, they're that bit stronger. And that comes with experience. And I want them to share those experiences together. If you've got those experiences together as a team, then as a team, you are stronger. And that's what we're looking for.
It's funny you mentioned that. That reminded me of Andy Flower in The Edge, for anyone who's watched that kind of mentality.
Yep.
So, yeah, just listening to all of that, though, it does seem as though there is this massive ambition, and it is long term. That's the key thing that myself and Joe mentioned about the Quiet Revolution, which we've coined it here on the podcast for so many weeks now. And just bringing in all these youngsters is very, very exciting. I have to admit, if you're a Leicestershire fan out there right now, you're looking at the club, you've had that fantastic rebrand going back to the tradition associated with the club. You've got brand new players coming in, some really exciting young talent as well, highly touted in Vial Mulder and Naveen Al-Haq on the international stage as well. And it is just an incredibly exciting time, but I suppose a very, I don't know, not philosophical, but very, very deep question per se, is what do you think that Leicestershire fans should expect from the 2021 season? Not necessarily in terms of silverware and
stuff, pressure.
But in terms of progression and evolution of the team itself. What are your expectations and what should the fans' expectations be?
I have no issue with the fans expecting silverware. And quite right too. That's what you pay your membership to see. And we've got to try and live up to those expectations. I think we will. I am adamant that as well that we will communicate openly with our fan base to explain why we did certain things, why we're progressing, why we're maybe not progressing in certain areas. So I think that dialogue, that communication, that engagement with our stakeholders is crucial, because I want them to understand our journey. And I think that will keep them better informed of the decisions that we're making as well. So I do. I want them to expect as much as possible, and so do I. I'm a fan, and I expect silverware. Whether we can do that remains to be seen. So I've got no problem with having that burden on our shoulders. And I think, like I sort of said at the beginning, we enter a competition to win it, and I want our players to win it, and we shouldn't be scared of anybody in the competition. So, and collectively. Collectively, as a club, if the stars align, and I've seen it in sport, if they align, anything is achievable. But it's not just about the players. It's about the corporate people behind the scenes. It's about the fan base. It's about the board. It's about the coaches. It's about everybody that's connected. The stars align, then you can be an unstoppable machine, irrespective of your budget. Of course, our big budgets, you can make better decisions. But, you know, we've got to work, as I said, every pound we spend. And living in Yorkshire, I know how to spend a quid and get my money back. So, but yeah, it's important. It's important to us, really, that the expectation's high as well. You know, we'll live with that.
Mm. True. Dan, what about yourself? What are your views on the fans' expectations heading into this and beyond, actually, I'd say, into 2021 and beyond? Because, of course, it is a long-term project at Grace Road.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think there's a lot of different things that we can communicate to the fans. So, for example, you know, Leicestershire, perhaps over the last decade or so, the fans probably haven't been happy with the progress that the team made as a group. And you know, they've probably gone home from matches being disappointed, upset, you know, feel that they could, you know, things could be better. So the first thing that we really want to try and do, I think we've done that already to some extent, is to try and put a smile on their faces, that cause that optimism and make them look forward to coming down to Grace Road when they can do so. And, yeah, just build that kind of, you know, I like the old baseball film, which is Field of Dreams. And the mantra from that is, like, if you build it, they will come. And that's something that I think we can attribute here as well. You know, if we can build that strong foundation and good squad that's competing at a high level, then the fans are going to come. They're going to be optimistic. They're going to be positive, and it all goes hand in hand with each other. Well, of course, we're ambitious. We want to win trophies, absolutely. From my perspective as well, there's a lot of underlying metrics, performance metrics that we measure internally, and we've got to keep progressing on them. We've got to look towards hitting those benchmarks. We've got benchmark levels that if we hit those levels, we are going to perform very, very well in competitions. And it's about getting the squad to achieve those levels. And if we do so, that if we by doing the correct processes, following the correct processes, we're going to be able to achieve those benchmarks, which is ultimately will culminate in long-term success and hopefully some short-term success as well.
Well, of course, yeah, that's the end goal, isn't it, per se? Taking Leicestershire, as we mentioned right at the start, back to where they belong. How many years has it been since the trophy? 2011 was the last time, wasn't it? The T20, I believe.
Yeah, T20, yeah. So it's 20 years, isn't it? No.
10 years. Right. I was going to say, that made me lose perspective of time for a second. When was the last finals day for Leicester?
That would be the 2011, wasn't it?
And I think Leicester beat Lancs in the 70s.
Yes.
And just one thing I'm very proud of, we remain the most successful T20 side.
Which is, yeah.
For the time being.
Won three trophies.
For the time being.
But that's something we're very proud of. So I'm holding on to that as much as I can.
There's a neighbour.
Who knows,
we
might be the fourth. We might get a fourth star. You never know. Yeah.
There's going to be a team in the West Midlands challenging you next season under the helm of Mark Robinson, Sam Hain, Will Rhodes. We'll be good contenders, I think, next season. What about yourself, Joe? How do you think for Lancs?
Hey, I think Lancs have got as good a chance as anyone. I put Lancs up there as one of the favourites.
And this sums
not,
up.
I'm not just being biased. Sport. I'm not. Although we don't know who our overseas players are yet, although I assume one will be Maxwell. So, yeah, I think Lancs have got as good a chance as anybody, maybe one of the favourites.
But yeah, so
I think the North group especially is just such a good group.
Mm.
I mean, literally, we've just talked about three teams being represented on this podcast. Then there's Notts, who are the defending champions, Northants, yeah, quality. Derbyshire, I think, are a very, very good
side.
Again,
they're another interesting team, aren't
Worcester.
They?
Yeah. So, you know, there's so many different... I think the North group is so strong. Not to say the South group isn't.
That's Northern powerhouse, absolutely.
And that's the North group has got a pretty good record on finals day as well in terms of...
Yeah, exactly.
...competition as well, yeah. I've got it all up on my computer now. I think there we go. 7 out of the last 8 finals days have been won by a North group team.
Exactly. There you go. So let's make that next season, regardless of who wins.
whoever goes through, just root for the Northern one, Joe.
No, never. That's one thing I am against, though, is rooting for, like, in the Champions League. I don't want an English team to win the Champions League. That's one thing I am against.
I'm the same. I'll support Tottenham, and if Arsenal won the Champions League, I'll be absolutely devastated.
Yeah, that's like when Liverpool won the Champions League 2 years ago. I was like, this is not Why are people happy for that? That is like the worst possible thing.
Yeah, I remember when John Terry slipped and missed the penalty against Man United a few years back. I was in Vegas watching it, and yeah,
of all places,
I was actually celebrating that a London team didn't win the Champions League. Says it all, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I just don't want an English team to win it. I'm always like that. So. Yeah.
Well, yeah, let's bring the conversation back on track from Champions League. But yeah, it's funny that, isn't it, with regards to... That's just sport in general, though, isn't it? We all want our respective teams to win. And I suppose something quite profound is that no team is entitled to success. You have to work really hard. And as both of you two have mentioned, this element of luck as well. The stars have to align. There has to be some destiny element as well. But just to end today's main segment before we go on to the albeit entertaining listener questions today, I did just have one more question. Can we expect anything else from Leicestershire before the 2021 season in terms of announcements? I know we can't go into detail per se, but is there still more after months and months and months of announcements? Is there still anything left?
I'm waiting for that Steve Smith signing.
Totally.
There's more to come. We've not stopped yet. We've got some announcements to make, I'm sure. You can never tell in this environment, this pandemic we're in, it changes almost daily. But yeah, watch this space, I would say.
Yeah, because you still have overseas slots to fill up as well. Mm. So I'm not, but obviously, I'm not, as you say, anything can happen. I'm not saying you're definitely going to fill them up. But, you know, they are there hypothetically if you were to. So yeah.
Watch this space.
Yeah, that's a sentence loaded with promise for the Leicestershire fans out there. Definitely. As I said, they must be absolutely lapping this up at the moment. It's fantastic. Very, very exciting times down at Grace Road. And talking of the Leicestershire fans, just to wrap up today's podcast, we did just have a couple of good listener questions, actually, from Foxes fans. So the first one is from Jake, long-term follower of the podcast. So shout out to Jake. First question, Sean, this is for you because you appeared in the video with Parky. Question one. Did Parky get to keep the GoPro, yes or no?
No, he didn't. I can't afford to give him that. Yeah, my budget's a tight. So, but yeah, it took Parky about 7 or 8 takes to get it right. So his acting ability was pretty naff. But no, he's a great lad. Great question from Jake. Things like that we want to do differently as well. We're a small team. And if you follow me on social media or the club on social media, we're trying to do just little different things, and you know, we've got one or two little things up our sleeve just to freshen it up a little bit and have a bit of fun, and I think that's what we want to do. You know, one thing that I am very keen on is building our fan base. Mm-hmm. You know, getting people more engaged with us, and I think we're announcing tomorrow, I think, that we're going to be one of the first clubs going on to TikTok. So we want people to follow that. So little things like that, you know, the marketing manager wants me to do a dance, but I've got 2 left feet, so I'm not doing that.
But I think, please.
There's all things like that. You know, we want to improve our social media and engagement and do creative and sometimes daft things. And credit to Tim Bresnan. I remember watching him do one with Yorkshire where he took over the interview one session, and it were brilliant. And I think things like that is what cricket should be about, making it more entertaining. So I'm determined for us to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. But don't expect to see Parky in any BBC dramas anytime soon.
Yeah. No, definitely not. No.
What about yourself though, Sean? I mean, the Oscar level acting did come out in this particular video. Right. What about yourself?
Oh no, me, no. My acting, I'm very wooden. I think Crossroads, maybe you're probably too young to remember it, but there was an old Midlands motel called Crossroads. It used to be on ITV, and the acting was so wooden. I think I'd have made them look like Oscar winners. I'm not that good an actor, I'm afraid.
Well, Sean does himself down a little bit there, because internally we call him Billy Bean sometimes, or Brad Pitt as the CEO of our team. So maybe there's an acting career in him still.
You never know.
But in terms of Jake's second part of that question, again, this is quite funny again. Did he get a fine for not sticking to the speed limit when driving in? Because he was definitely over 5 mph.
Yeah, he was. He got a ticking off for that. My stadium manager is very strict. She's been She's been our COVID security officer and all those sorts of things. So she's been very strict. So he did. He got a telling off for doing that. And we've got him on CCTV as well.
Got him on camera.
Any excuse to put him, give him a fine, you know.
Nah, good guy, isn't he? Callum Parkinson. And obviously, you know, your new vice-captain as well. That's going to be big, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm delighted for him. He's you know, committed his future to the club. He's become our VC. He's a great character in the changing rooms. He's determined, I think, as you saw last year, a real great season. And he, quite rightly, he got rewarded as a consequence by giving him the VC. He works well with Akers. So, yeah, you know, I'm delighted for him. He's a Bolton Wanderers fan, so I give him some stick about that. But yeah, top lad and part of the furniture, you know, and it's great. When we announced it, there was a tremendous reaction as well. And you can see that from our fan base. They really appreciated it. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing Parky play his role going forward. Really.
Definitely. Joe, what about yourself? What was your reaction to that when you found out he wasn't coming to Lancs?
Hey, I'll keep that. I'll just... yeah, move on from that. Move on from this happened though.
You
did one of the likes.
Parky twins. There you go, right?
Yeah, I did one of the likes, but it would have just, if they ever do play in the same team together, regardless of who that's for, there will be so many confused people when Parkinson is bowling from both ends and they look identical. Yeah. Yeah, there will be so many confused people. So yeah, the day that happens, regardless of who it's for, will be a good day.
Could be England. You never know.
Easily could be England.
Both very, very talented young spinners. Obviously, Callum being an off spinner, Parky being a leggy. But our final question for today's podcast then, this is a very, very intriguing question from Marco. This is for you, Sean. How can you transfer the huge interest in the game in terms of following, keeping up with scores, supporting the teams, into shirt/merch sales and visibility? And then the second part of that question is, does Sean's previous employment with Huddersfield help in that regard?
Yeah, without question. I'll take the second part first. Mm-hmm. Without question, I learnt so much at Huddersfield Town and working with a number of people across those 15 years at the club, from the owner of a company called The Card Factory. He taught me a lot, to David Wagner about how he motivates teams, people like Stuart Webber that Dan has mentioned, you know, so that expertise in there, I hope will put me in good stead. And I want to share that expertise with our staff here and develop our staff here, because I'm not going to be here forever. You know, there'll come a time when I have to hang my boots up. So I'm very keen for those people to come through. It is a challenge for cricket. You know, you do see on 4-day games, how the numbers, and I think for us, we've got to try every tactic we can to try and attract people into the 4-day game and get engaged with us. We had some really good figures last year on the streaming. So it's about how we convert those. Yeah, retail sales as well. You know, it's getting the kit rights. And, you know, I was one of the people that were involved in the Paddy Power deal with Huddersfield Town, and that may be a story for another day. So I think it's sometimes being creative, something innovative. You know, I'm not going to say we're going to get it right every single time, but it's then how you learn from that and make it better. I'm very, very keen to really engage with our fan base. You know, I'm working with the Cricketers Supporters Association on my desk here. I've got a survey that we're doing, so we're going to get that out to as many people, so we've got to learn from that. The South Asian Heritage Project that we're looking at here, we're trying to develop that, and that will mean me getting out into certain communities. So it's all this pressing palm, reaching out, developing, listening, giving people what they want as well, you know, when they arrive at the stadium. I've done a partnership deal with a company called the Fan Experience Company. And so we're learning from them, you know, things like what Dan said about bringing Stuart Webber into experiences behind the scenes as well. So it's never ending. And I would say to our fans, I won't rest until we get it right. And that applies to everybody. You know, we will learn. We are students of the game, the Academy of the Cricket. And you'll see, hopefully, over the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, a real evolution of the Running Foxes. And this, you know, we've got four phrases: the Academy of Cricket, a new breed, the Running Foxes, and Foxes Family are our four key phrases. So they're hugely important to us, and that is how we will evolve over the next few years. We've got some short-term challenges. So we've got to generate revenue. We've got to increase membership. We've got to give them an experience. We've got to create a winning team. But that will build over that period. And the stuff that I've learned at Huddersfield Town and Oldham Athletic and Super League before that will hopefully stand me in good stead. And I've signposted you to an article I did with the Yorkshire Post a couple of weeks ago that was in their sports supplement one weekend. And it talks about that very a journey that we took at Huddersfield Town that I'm trying to bring. And with the help of people like Dan and Paul Nixon and the staff here, we'll bring it to Leicestershire. So we will definitely be one to watch. We'll be one to sort of keep an eye on. And I'm fed up of us being at the bottom of the tables. I want us to be at the top.
Well, I think that Leicestershire fans can definitely agree with that sentiment. And that is a fantastic way to wrap up what's been an absolutely brilliant podcast. It really has been. I mean, from us two here at the Carrot Cricket Podcast, Dan, thank you so much for coming on. And Sean, thank you as well for taking your time today. It has really been an intriguing podcast. It's definitely lived up to the billing. As we said, we've been wanting to do this for absolutely months. And this has just been a brilliant podcast. And for any Leicestershire fans out there, we keep on mentioning it. Future's bright. The Quiet Revolution is well and truly underway. And yeah, should be some exciting times at Grace Road in the next few years. But just before we end today's podcast then, gents, do you have any kind of just wrap-up words, anything final to say, any social media channels to promote, for example? Sean, if I start with you first.
Yeah, of course. No, first and foremost, I would like to sort of say thank you to you guys and keep up what you're doing. I think, you know, I've listened to a few of your podcasts and it's great to hear what you're doing. I think things like this are brilliant for cricket. You know, it keeps us modern, keeps us fresh. Your challenges, that's absolutely superb, you know, and I think so well done to you guys and long may it continue. I think from Leicestershire, it's yeah, watch us progress, watch us develop, watch us learn, you know, and write us off at your peril, because Leicestershire is here to stay and our future is most definitely bright.
100%.
Follow that one, Dan.
Well, obviously, I echo everything that Sean says in terms of the optimism, the excitement, the potential of our team is huge going forward. And just believe in us, enjoy the journey, come with us on that journey, and we'll do our very, very best to put a smile on your faces and to send you home happy on a match by match basis. We're super optimistic for the future, and we think that it's going to be very, very bright for Foxes fans. So thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And as Sean said, keep up the good work, because this podcast is fantastic.
Honestly, guys, well, thank you. I mean, there's no need to heap the praise on us, honestly. It's just what we love to do. But yes, thank you so much for taking the time today. As I said, it's been a fantastic episode. But that does bring us to an end to today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast then. Just as always, guys, thank you very much for tuning in. As always, we'll see you on the next one.